across America. Live, this is Point of View. And now, Kirby Anderson.
Thank you for joining me. You know, on this program so often, we talk about such issues as theology and apologetics. We talk about how to articulate a biblical worldview, how to defend a biblical worldview. And a key part of that, whether it's evangelism or apologetics or discipleship, is really understanding sometimes the assumptions individuals have. And if you have some level of biblical discernment, it will help you be much more effective. So we're going to spend some time in this first hour today really focusing on how these assumptions really affect you and affect the people around you. And we bring to the microphone David Richardson, is the founder of Assumptions Institute, an individual that has actually been in a ministry with university professors for many years, on the staff of CRU, formerly known as Campus Crusade for Christ, and actually founded the Christian faculty minister in Atlanta at Georgia Tech. Has a bachelor's degree from the University of Portland, a master's degree from the International School of Theology, a second master's of theology from Applied Theology from the University of Oxford, and is the author of this book, which we have information about on our website, Transparent, How to See Through the Powerful Assumptions That Control You. David, welcome to Point of View.
Thanks, Kirby. I appreciate you having me on today.
We've crossed paths before and certainly have appreciated your ministry. You've got an incredible who's who of individuals that have endorsed this book. Stan Oakes, Eric Metaxas, William Lane Craig, for example, Charles Thaxton, Stuart McAllister, Paul Copan, and a number of other individuals that have been on this program. And I think all of them appreciate the fact that you're taking the time to help us understand that these assumptions that oftentimes many people don't even understand that they're making, really help them perceive the world, really, in a sense, affects their worldview. And if we're going to be effective in evangelism and discipleship, we really need to understand those assumptions, don't we?
Absolutely. Those are the things that actually drive everything we say, do, and think every day. The assumptions that we all make are literally that powerful. But the funny thing about assumptions are they're the things you don't question, and they're the things you never actually overtly talk about, but they're constantly operating in the background, driving everything that we do.
You had you open the book, I might say, by having this conversation with your daughter, but you point out something we talk about so often here on Point of View, that as many as 75% of young adults who call themselves Christians in one way or another seem to walk away from their faith in their years after that, you know, whether they go into the military, whether they go to college, whether they go into just some kind of business. And this has been happening for decades. And as you point out, one of the other benefits, I think, of understanding these assumptions is that it would help young people, as they head off to college, the military, they head off into the business world, if they understand those assumptions, they'll understand in some respects why certain things seem to challenge their faith and why they maybe need to reevaluate some of their own assumptions.
Absolutely. This is the kind of thing that, you know, as a father, has been in the back of my mind for a long time with my own children as they were growing up, but then also watching the children in my local church, as well as on college campuses where I've worked for so many years, wondering what is it that's really causing this disconnect. And I think what that is that we have this divided way of understanding the world, where our faith is meaningful for our personal lives, you know, for our family devotions and relationships and things that we do in our local church. But when it comes to real world things like science and history, literature, economics, business, those kinds of things, God really doesn't have a whole lot to do or say about that in most Christians' lives. He does. It's just that they don't understand how he relates to real-world things. And so when our kids grow up and they have been raised this way, and it's not just the result of going to public schools or state universities, we actually teach it to our own children ourselves. Because when we model what we do every day, whatever world that we're in, does God really have a meaningful connection and relationship to what we are doing every day as adults? So our kids see, okay, yeah, your faith is great in your personal life, but God doesn't really seem to have much to do with your public life, and so if he doesn't really have anything to do there, why does he have anything to do with your personal life? And when they become adults themselves, they just walk away from it all. They just go to the thing that they've really been raised in, both by public education as well as by their own family, that God is meaningless when it comes to real-world things. So he's really not that meaningful in their personal lives either, and they just disconnect. That's something that has been an integral part of my ministry with college professors, trying to help them make those same connections. And it's the power of assumptions that I've discovered that helps me do that.
Well, and again, this idea of living a double life, having a sacred personal life and a secular public life, is something, as you just pointed out, and I think we want to reinforce that again, that happens in the middle school, because in some respects, young children begin to realize, okay, I've got to kind of on the public sphere here, please my parents, but I also have to please my teachers. And already I'm seeing a dichotomy, a real difference between what sometimes I hear at home or at church and what I hear in the classroom. And so, as you point out, that continues on even to professors that you've worked with before. And yet, if you really want to develop a consistent world and life view, that means that your Christian values extend over every area of your life. True?
Yes. Well, and it's more than just our Christian values. It is a conviction that God really does inform real-world things. You know, like, for instance, I walk onto a college campus and I talk to professors, and they understand their responsibility as a Christian to talk about their faith with their students and their coworkers, and they may be a little afraid to do that at first, but eventually they begin seeing success at that. But when it comes to what they do in the classroom, the thing that they teach, where they're a leader and expert at, I ask them, how does God inform that? Other than you're a nice guy because you're a Christian, how does he actually contribute to knowledge? And they look at me with funny looks and say, well, what does God have to do with a chemical equation? Or I could talk about God or not talk about God. It's just 18 weeks of calculus. I really don't understand what you're asking me to do here. Not that I'm not interested. It's just I don't understand those connections. And so while even the best and brightest of Christians on college campuses get the ministry side, the personal side, when it comes to their public life, the thing that they're a leader and expert at, God really is basically, I'm a nice person because I'm a Christian, but how does he contribute to knowledge? I don't know. Chemistry's not in the Bible, so, how do I do that? Well, when I made this discovery about the power of assumptions, I went back to those same professors and showed them this, and they began changing their courses because they understood how God contributed to knowledge in the thing that they are a leader and expert at.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about a CAT scan, not the one that you think, a critical assumptions test, which is so key to this. And these are some of the core assumptions to begin to understand the difference, if you will, the different rivers and tributaries and how some of that plays itself out. This is a fascinating book called Transparent, How to See Through the Powerful Assumptions That Control You. David Richardson is with us. He is the author of the book, and we have information about him and his ministry on our website, pointofview.net. We'll be back with him and more right after this.
This is Viewpoints with Kirby Anderson.
Tomorrow in theaters throughout America will be the film In Our Hands, The Battle for Jerusalem, produced by CBN. June 5th marks the 50th anniversary of the 1967 Six-Day War in Israel. This film is an accurate depiction of what took place and will help tell the story that few people in America know about the battle. Arab nations surrounding Israel had a battle plan to wipe Israel off the map. The young Jewish nation was both outmanned and outgunned. Not only did Israel survive, the troops moved into Jerusalem and even occupied the Golan Heights. Production for the film took about a year to complete. Gordon Robertson was in the studio with me to promote the film and talked about the various permissions they had to receive from the Israeli government to shoot in the actual places where the battles took place. The arms and uniforms are authentic or reproductions. Some of the most pivotal battle scenes are shot at Ammunition Hill, and the film is told through the compelling stories of the Israeli paratroopers. One of the most memorable scenes shows a woman who gives a flag to the battalion commander. She explains that she brought the flag to him because it flew in the old city before they left in 1948. She wanted him to hang the flag on the city once again. You know, in the last 50 years, archaeologists have uncovered some of history's most important archaeological finds in and around Jerusalem. These discoveries were only possible because Israel was able to occupy the city after the Six-Day War. There are some dark stories in the film. There were Israeli deaths and casualties. People were injured both physically and mentally, but the movie does try to provide light in the midst of the dark reality. Michael Medved calls it one of the most moving films I've seen this year and a fitting 50-year commemoration of a crucial turning point in world history. I hope you go to a theater tomorrow to see it. I'm Kirby Anderson, and that's my point of view.
In our hands, the battle for Jerusalem. In select theaters, one night only, Tuesday, May 23rd. Information at inourhands1967.com.
You're listening to Point of View, your listener-supported source for truth.
You know, inside us there is sort of an autopilot that really conditions everything that we think and say and do. And that autopilot are these assumptions we're talking about. And if you'd like to know a little bit more about this book, first of all, we have a link to David Richardson's website. I might also give you an assignment, and that is there is a nice video that he has put there, kind of a trailer that explains that. It's about 3.5 minutes long, so I would encourage you to click on the picture next to his picture there where it says See More, and then go and scroll down to the transparent trailer. Watch it, and then click on the share button and put it on your Facebook page or send it out as a Twitter post or something like that to get a conversation going and also to let more people know about this book. And, of course, you can order the book there and also get some other information, including an app. We'll talk more about that in just a minute. But, David, I began by talking about this idea of a CAT scan or a critical assumptions test scan. Talk about that, because that's one of the many very helpful devices that you develop so that we can begin to do a better job of evaluating some of those assumptions that autopilot in each one of us.
Yes, that's one of the most amazing things that came out of writing this book. Is something practical. I mean, when was the last time you heard of an apologetics book that was practical for everyday people that are not naturally inclined towards thinking and, you know, logic and philosophy and all that? This is the thing that I'm really excited about, because this gives you the ability, first of all, to connect your faith to your public life, but at the same time for students, this gives them an ability to have real-world discernment in real time. What I mean by that is that it takes no more than maybe 30 seconds to use the critical. It is laid out with 8 different questions that apply to practically anything that you read, anything you watch, or anything you hear. So it's not just for articles and textbooks. But when you're watching TV shows and movies, or as you're listening to a program on the radio or a conversation with your friend or a lecture in the classroom, can you tell what the message is, whether it's true or not, and why, and be able to do it in real time? The critical assumptions test allows you to do that, because you're not trying to figure out the sophisticated ideologies or the complicated argument. All you're getting at are the simple assumptions that are underneath the argument. The simple assumptions that probably aren't true, probably don't work, and don't match the actual world that we see, know, and experience. And if they are, if they don't, then they're false. And that allows us to quickly get at those things. And the whole process for using the critical assumptions test is automated with my Transparent app, which is available both for iOS devices and also Android devices. So you can get it in your app store and download it and use it straight away.
I might just mention again, the link for all of that is on our website, pointofview.net, which will take you to David Richardson's website, or you can go there directly. Let's say we can, for just a few minutes, kind of work our way through a few questions and assumptions. The first one, of course, is what is really real? And everybody would go, what? But this really is important, because if you believe that only nature is real, in other words, what I see, hear, and feel and touch is here, but there's no spiritual, there's no supernatural, well, that's going to lead you down, if you will, one river. If you believe that it's only mental and spiritual, that's going to lead you down another. And if you believe, as Christians do, that we have both a creator and a creation, that's going to lead you somewhere else. So that's kind of, even though it seems like such a almost kind of a bizarre first question, it's really critical because it's the difference between atheism and naturalism or pantheism and Eastern thought or Christianity, isn't it?
Yes, or secular humanism, for that matter. When I talk about something that's either mental or spiritual only, we understand as Christians, you know, Eastern mysticism and New Age spirituality and those kinds of spiritual things, but not fully understanding that people think that there are an ideal human and an ideal human society and the belief that we can actually build it. And so they have this mental picture, this ideal in the back of their mind, and that's what drives everything in their way of thinking. So how you answer the question, what is really real, is actually the foundation of your entire rational process. Before we can talk about a thing, we have to have an understanding of what's here to talk about in the first place and what the nature of it is. But most of us are not, you know, professional philosophers, so we never even ask that question. But we all do answer it. We just don't do it formally and intentionally most of the time.
And that's a good point, because lots of times you will be engaged in a conversation with an individual, or you're going to be, for students heading off to college next year, in a classroom with a professor speaking, or when you watch television or a movie or you go to an internet website, you'll have individuals that maybe believe that nature is all that there is, but they do it in such a kind of an influential way and so kind of dogmatically that it's easy to begin to say, you know, I really do need to take those spiritual ideas and put them into my private life, because this whole conversation has no connection at all to the supernatural, to the eternal, to the spiritual. And so in some respects, just as soon as you walk in the door, just as soon as you turn on the movie, just as soon as you open up the newspaper, just as soon as you find yourself engaged in a conversation with an individual, that assumption sort of sets the rules of the game and makes it more difficult even to begin to share your faith or to begin to think biblically about some of those issues.
Sure. Yeah, you oftentimes don't see those deeper questions up front in the conversation, but what you do find is people saying, well, what is a human being? It's just a highly evolved animal. Where does knowledge begin? It begins with me, because there's nothing spiritual, so where else does it begin? It begins with me. And what is good? Good is just whatever I decide it is, or whatever we as a group decide it is. And what's the problem with the world? Well, the problem with the world's religious people. It's those people that believe that mythical things like gods and spirits and things are real. For a physical-only kind of person, that's mental delusion. And so that's where the problem in the world comes from, is people believing in fantasies as if they were really real. And that all stems from that first assumption. The only thing that's real is a physical-only universe. It's just matter and energy. That's all. And so consequently, when we talk about the issues of the world, they spill out in those other areas, but they're generated by that deeper answer to that question that's at the bottom of their thinking process.
I might just mention, if you have a young person going off to college, this is one place where I think getting a copy of the book would be good, but also getting that app. They might say, well, I'm not sure I'm going to read the book. I'm a senior. I really have no interest in this. But when you tell them they got an app, that would be kind of interesting. And again, you talk about those eight questions, because the first four are kind of the big picture questions. We talked about one, what is really real? Number two, where does everything come from, as you mentioned? Number three, how does everything work? And number four, where is everything going? So those are kind of the big picture questions, which we'll come back to a little bit after the break. But then you have a series of four questions that are people questions, and you mentioned those too. What is a human being? Where does knowledge begin? What is good? And what is humanity's basic problem? And so I think for people that have always had trouble putting abstract ideas and philosophy in some kind of structure, you've made this so much easier and made it so much easier for people to begin to apply that critical assumptions test in ways that they never really were able to do that in the past.
Yes, and that's one of the things that I'm really excited about with this is because, yes, I do have above average intellectual capacities, I guess, because I wouldn't be doing the work that I do. But I'm the son of a truck driver. You know, I grew up in a single wide trailer house. I'm familiar with regular people and the way that they think and talk. And they don't talk like ivory tower university faculty. I can work in that area, but that's not going to help a lot of people. That's why I did not write Transparent as your usual apologetics book. I want it for everyday people so that regular people can get a hold of something practical and learn to be able to see through the messages in the news, the messages in the media, the messages in academia, and be able to relate their faith to it in ways that work. And that's the exciting thing about how the critical assumptions test and the Transparent app enables people to get in the game that way.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll get into a little more of the detail. And, of course, let you ask a question if you'd like to do so. 1-800-351-1212. We have a link to daverichardson.org. You can go there directly, but we have a link. Again, you will find out more about the book. There's a place where you can order the book. I see some of the endorsements and other resources. But again, as I mentioned, there are some other things that you will find very helpful there, not the least of which is you might want to watch the video trailer and pass that on to others as well. Let's take a break. If you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-351-1212. If you want to sit back and listen, please do so, and we'll have more right after this.
From CBN Documentaries comes a new film, In Our Hands, The Battle for Jerusalem.
Our goal is clear, to wipe Israel off the map.
For 6 days in 1967, surrounded by enemies on all sides, Israel stood alone, fighting for survival. In Our Hands, The Battle for Jerusalem, in select theaters for a one-night event, Tuesday, May 23rd only. Theater and ticket information is available at InOurHands1967.com.
We go through seasons, getting our education, falling in love, marriage, children, challenges, success. Sometimes the checkbook is full, and sometimes it's not. And through all of that, Point of View is here, working for you, working with you to make a difference. Please consider whether this is the season for you to support Point of View, to join the Truth Team. Join today at pointofview.net/team or call for details 800-347-5151, 800-347-5151. Let's work together for good. pointofview.net/team. Point of View will continue after this.
You are listening to Point of View. The opinions expressed on Point of View do not necessarily reflect the views of the management or staff of this station. And now, here again is Kirby Anderson.
Continue our conversation today with David Richardson. He is the author of this book, Transparent, How to See Through the Powerful Assumptions That Control You. And David, for just a few minutes, let's go to your website and talk about some of the resources that are there. I've already mentioned some of them, but you have done a very good job at daverichardson.org. Or again, they can follow the link. They can find out more about the book. They can get it as an ebook or as a printed book. They can get the app and a variety of other resources. So tell us what is available as people go to your website and what is available for them to use even in their individual study. But I also think this might be a very good kind of Bible study, Sunday school class, don't you think?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, when you want to talk about more than just your standard Bible study kinds of things, you want to apply your faith. You want to be able to understand current events and what's going on in the world and how to be an effective ambassador for Christ. That's really the reason that I wrote Transparent is not just about sharing your faith, but how do you live your faith in real world situations? So, you know, you can get both the print copy of the book, as well as e-copies. It's available both as Kindle, Nook, and iBook versions. The Transparent app, of course, is available there on the website for both iOS and Android devices. So whether it's your tablet or your phone, it's right there in the App Store. All you do is just click on the link there, and you can download it straight to your phone or your tablet. I'm working on the audiobook. I'm almost done with it, so I'm hoping by summertime to have that up on Audible, but not quite ready yet. So if somebody's thinking that, I'm working on it, but it's not quite there yet, but it will be shortly.
Let me also mention, as you go to the website, as you scroll down, you'll actually have to click on the button there that says Explore the Book, because I know many of you probably are saying, well, I want to see the trailer that you just talked about, but I don't see it. So you have to click on the button that says Explore the Book, then you'll go down and see the trailer, which, again, my assignment to you is it's about 3.5 minutes long. Just take the time to watch it, and then click that share button. Put it somewhere on a Facebook page, or maybe send it to your pastor or Sunday school leader. Maybe they could think about whether or not they would want to use this for teaching and those kinds of things. Maybe use it as a tweet on your Twitter or whatever it might be. There are just a lot of opportunities for you to take that and to pass it on to others. And David, if people said, well, there is some great material there, but maybe do you have some study guides, some questions, or would you be available to come and speak in a church or things of that nature? What would be available for some of our church leaders who are listening to the program today?
Study guides are in process. Right now, there isn't anything formal. As far as speaking, teaching, and consulting, of course I'm available for those kinds of things. All you have to do is contact me at info@assumptionsinstitute.org, and I'd be happy to work out whatever arrangements to do that. This is a brand new ministry. You've been involved in starting something up from scratch. There's a lot of balls to juggle as fast as you can go. But God's doing some amazing stuff already, and I'm very excited about where this thing is going to be going.
Well, thank you for being on the program today. We wanted to release this to our nationwide audience, and I think they're going to find that very helpful. Let's go back and talk about how to see the connections. You know, Francis Schaeffer used to say that Christians see things in bits and pieces. They don't see the worldview. And I would say that David Richardson says people don't see the connections and the assumptions. Let's start with this idea of a type 1 profile. If you believe that only nature exists, then you ask the question, where does nature come from? Well, nature made nature, so that means everything's an evolutionary process. So by the time you get down to the people questions, you'd have to say that all human beings are just a more highly evolved animal. So there's no right or wrong. There's no good or bad. And so you can see how each one of the prior assumptions also connects to the other assumptions and gives you this secular humanistic worldview, this naturalistic worldview, this atheistic worldview. It is consistent within its assumptions, isn't it?
Oh, yes. I'm certainly not saying there isn't a logical consistency. But what I am saying is that whatever the answers to those questions are, first of all, there's going to be places where there's disconnects from reality, and that's because that way of assuming does not reflect the actual world that we see, know, and experience. To give you an example, if you say that the natural world is all there is, so nature made nature, and it's nature that runs nature, so somehow the laws of physics makes the universe, and the laws of physics run the universe. Well, think about it for a minute. If that's true, wouldn't the laws have to exist prior to the universe in order to make one? But the problem with that is the laws are tied to the universe. There is no gravity if there's no mass. And there is no conservation of energy if there's no energy. So which comes first? The laws of the universe. This is why Stephen Hawking wrote his book, A Brief History of Time, trying to solve that very problem. He came up with an interesting, elegant solution. 20 years later, he sold 16 million books, but does anybody talk about it? No. Why? Because it doesn't actually solve the problem. And the reason it doesn't is because it doesn't describe the actual world that we live in. It removes the problem one step, but doesn't solve it, because that's the wrong view of the universe and where it came from, so it does not have an adequate answer.
I might just mention, too, that after you've taken people through these different profiles, 1, 2, and 3, you also then begin to apply some of that to science, to the social science, to government, politics, law, public policy, business, economics, because these aren't just philosophical questions. They also play themselves out in public policy that we have, in economic assumptions, in ways we want to control the economy, ways we want to write our laws. Because if you would indeed have different views about human nature, then you're obviously going to also have different views about what social science and what government policies can be implemented based upon that assumption about who what human beings are.
Yes. The most prevalent of those are what I call type 2 assumptions. That's the kind of person that thinks that some kind of ideal is the thing that's really real. The physical world, it may be real, it may not be real. For sure, it's not as important as that ideal out there. And what we see in our society today is the whole notion that there is an ideal human, an ideal human society, and the belief that we can build it. Yes, we see flaws and faults in that society and in people, but these enlightened visionaries see how to fix it. You know, they see how to do it. And so with collective effort, if we all work together, we can build a better world. And, you know, when you think of people describing themselves as progressives, what is it that they are progressing toward? They have a goal. Otherwise, how do you measure progress? How do you know that you're actually getting somewhere? And that goal is the ideal. They believe that ideals are real and that they can be achieved, that we can perfect human beings into something that is virtuous and reflects that ideal.
Well,
if you think if you think that's real, then there's two indispensable tools for that. Education, that's how you persuade people to conform to the ideal. And when people won't voluntarily conform to the ideal, then you make them conform, and that's legislation. And if necessary, violence.
And again, just back to the point, you know, if you go from a type one, which would be more of an atheistic, naturalistic point of view, to type three, which would be a Christian view, you would say, well, I would have real problems as a Christian with this utopian idea that eventually we're going to perfect human nature, because I would start with the assumption that God exists, that human beings are sinful, all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. You're never going to find perfect individuals. You're never going to have a perfect world, at least until Jesus comes back. And so you're going to reject some of those utopian ideas you just talked about.
Yes, because you know, we understand that while God is good, you know, Psalm 119:68 says, "The Lord is good and does good." That's who God is and what he does. So the definition of good itself revolves around God and his character. And so when we look at ourselves in relationship to who he is, we think, well, I'm not like that. I would like to be, but it's not that I don't know the right thing. It's just I can't always do the right thing. And so that's the problem with the world. It's not religious people. It's not inequality. It's the fact that I myself am not good. It's not that I'm always bad. It's just that I'm not always good. Ecclesiastes 7 tells us that even the righteous are not continually good. So we always have to have accountability and checks and balances, because that's the nature of a sinful human being, is that we just can't always be good.
Yes.
And that's why these utopian visions simply are not possible. I can't even fix myself, much less how in the world am I going to fix somebody else?
Well said. Let's take a break. We'll come back and continue our conversation for just a few more minutes with David Richardson. He also has a call to action and some applications. So we'll spend a little more time talking about this book, Transparent, How to See Through the Powerful Assumptions That Control You. We'll have more right after this.
Welcome to the First Liberty Briefing. I'm Jeremy Dice. According to the Fresno Bee, the Fresno City Council is considering adding the national motto, "In God We Trust," to the wall of the council chambers. But at least one local resident opposes the proposal. In the mind of one atheist protester, the delicate balance between church and state is upset entirely by the public display of these four words. And despite the fact that the atheist writes, quote, "Atheists like me feel the idea of God has little meaning," unquote, he encourages the local community to oppose a word which he believes has little meaning. One wonders how a word with such little meaning can violate the so-called separation of church and state, but that's another issue. Of course, if folks wanted to purchase the article in the Fresno Bee, they would do so with coins bearing the national motto since 1864. The city council would be in good company with the United States House of Representatives, which has the motto emblazoned behind the speaker's dais. And on the way to City Hall, residents may have to drive by police or sheriff's cruisers sporting the national motto. Throughout America's history, the national motto has been honored and celebrated as an expression of what it means to be an American. Any effort to prevent its display should be rejected as bald efforts to rewrite our history and destroy our heritage. To learn how First Liberty is protecting religious liberty for all Americans, visit firstliberty.org.
You can learn how to protect religious freedom in the workplace, public schools, your church, the military, and more, by downloading First Liberty's free Religious Liberty Protection Kits at firstliberty.org. That's firstliberty.org. If you want hope for religious freedom, go to firstliberty.org.
Now, back to Point of View, your listener-supported source for truth.
Back for a few more minutes, David Richardson with us again as we're talking about his book, Transparent, How to See Through the Powerful Assumptions That Control You. And David, as we go through this, I think a lot of people are saying, okay, how do we begin to move into this area of using this? And of course, you have, first of all, provided an excellent book that has a lot of resources. You have an app, but you also have a call to action. And this is something that I know you've been thinking about. Ben, you worked with a crew, formerly known as Campus Crusade for Christ. You've worked with students. You've worked with professors. You recognize how important it is, whether we're in the academic world or out in the everyday world, to begin to apply some of these principles in an effective way. So talk about what your call to action might be and how people can really be involved with you in teaching this and passing it on to others.
Well, the thing that I'm most concerned about is that Christians today really are not engaged with their faith in their public lives. So when it's students, they don't understand how to discern truth in real-world situations. And so that causes them to disconnect because God doesn't relate to the real world. And that's because adults model the fact that while my faith is meaningful in my personal life, it's not all that important or meaningful in my public life. And I, in the chapter that's a call to action, I talk about a guy named Mark White, who is a good friend, who was a professor at Georgia Tech for many years. One of the things that happened with Mark is, you know, he's a committed Christian involved in his community and on campus, is he had this nagging thing in the back of his mind, wondering, well, yes, I'm an active Christian, what does God really have to do with the thing that I'm good at? And for him, it's chemical engineering.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he one day came to the conclusion, you know, I think God knows more about the chemicals than I do. And maybe I ought to ask him about that. And as he began doing that, it eventually led him to do something really radical. And that is, he actually stepped down as the principal investigator of his own research group, which that's a huge thing at a major university like Georgia Tech. Because that's how you build your career. You are the guy that's running the research agenda, and you're the one that generates the papers and all that, and you have a whole team of people, graduate students and assistant professors, helping you do that. Well, when he made Jesus the principal investigator of his own research group, it was about 12 months later, his research group started making discoveries that no one had ever seen before, because they were asking Jesus about the chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
And then the publication rate of his group went up.
Yes.
And then the funding rate for his research group went up 10 times.
Yes, you showed that in the book, and it's just fascinating to see all of a sudden what happened. Go ahead.
And then he eventually got a knock on his door from the search committee at the Dave C. Squam School of Chemical Engineering at Mississippi State, asking him to come be the director of their School of Chemical Engineering. And they said, no, you don't understand. We're not asking you to apply. You're the guy. Will you take the job? And he left Georgia Tech for the last 5 years of his career to run that school. And he said, I went there for two reasons. One, to start a faculty ministry at Mississippi State for Christians, because they don't have one, and he learned how to do that at Georgia Tech. But second, he said, I'm going there to disciple young chemical engineers and how to make Jesus the principal investigator of their research. And when was the last time you heard discipleship and chemical engineering in the same phrase?
That is amazing.
That's the power of assumptions, because he knows that Jesus applies to every area of life, not just his personal life, but his chemical engineering. And not just he's a nice guy because he's a Christian, but Jesus contributes to knowledge in chemical engineering. And just as an extra added bonus, while he was there, God gave him a new discovery where he discovered a catalyst, because that's his expertise, is engineering catalysts to create chemical reactions. He created a new catalyst that will turn ordinary household garbage into biodiesel. And that is, you know, it's an amazing contribution to his field, just because he talks to God on a regular basis.
Wow.
About his chemistry, and it changed his life, his professional life and his personal life. But, you know, that's what it is for most of us. We don't know how to connect our faith to our public life in any meaningful way. But when you do, amazing things happen. And the power of assumptions is where those connections are made. At the level of assumptions, God is everywhere.
And I'm just thinking for other people saying, well, I'm not a chemical engineer, but, you know, when you are going to give a speech, or you're going to write a paper, or you're going to make a presentation, or whatever it might be, a lot of times we come to God and we say, well, God, I think I got this covered, but I got a few questions about this last 5%. You know, in other words, we cover most of it in the flesh. And
yes.
If we're trying to be spiritual, we'll add God into that 5% that we can't quite figure out or we need. But what
exactly.
I hear you saying is with Mark White or any of us, to make Christ the very center of your life might be so revolutionizing that we would never have imagined it if we didn't step out in faith and actually head down that trail.
Yes. And even if you threw that out there that you need to make those connections, if you were to ask a person, okay, how do I do that? Most people would have no clue where to start. And that's what I did with this book, is not just giving you the theoretical framework, but, hey, if you're going into sciences, or if you're going into business or economics or public policy or whatever it is, there are assumptions that play out there. And I actually walk through them for you so that I give you the train, I give you the rails and a station, and actually get you started down the road of living your faith out in your public life in a way that actually works.
Well, again, just some great resources available. So let me again real quickly mention that your website is linked on our website here. You can go to daverichardson.org. And just in case somebody has just joined us and did not hear some of the material we mentioned before, you have an app. You have some other resources if people are interested in the future in getting a study guide or some other resources. They can connect up with you or even consult with you and have you come and speak.
Absolutely. Our organization website is assumptionsinstitute.org, and there's more details about the broader agenda. And then, of course, daverichardson.org and the book page, thetransparentbook.com. Those have all kinds of great resources available for anybody that is serious about connecting their faith to their public life.
And I might just mention that we do have a link to your Facebook page as well as some of those websites. So I think people will be able to find that material, and I would encourage them to study it individually, but also maybe talk to or contact some individuals that are in leadership positions in your church. This would be a great study to do in a small group or in a Sunday school class or a Bible fellowship. So, David, thank you so very much for writing it, and thank you for giving us an hour today here on Point of View.
Well, you're very kind to have me on. Thank you very much, Kirby.
Well, let's take a break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking with Mario Zonstra, who is the president of East West Ministries International. We're going to talk a little bit more about a topic we addressed last week when we talked about the International Day of the Unreached People, and I think you're going to find this very encouraging and also motivating in terms of your evangelism, in terms of your desire to have a missions outreach to various unreached people groups. So I think you're going to find that very helpful as well. And of course, we welcome your phone calls then as well. 1-800-351-1212. If you want to know more about either of our guests today, you can go to our website, which is pointofview.net. That is the first resource I wanted to put in your hands. Number two, My Viewpoints commentary today is about the film that will air tomorrow night, and you will be able to see that if you go to a theater near you. It's entitled In Our Hands, The Battle for Jerusalem, and we've had in studio with us Gordon Robertson of CBN talking about this, and tomorrow night, Tuesday night, is when you can go to a theater near you. Over 700 theaters are going to be playing this, and so I would encourage you to go so that you can learn more about the 1967 Six-Day War. My commentary is there for you as well. And as you go there, hopefully you'll also click on that button that says Truth Team. That's a way in which you can support this ministry and learn more about these kinds of topics every single day. Mario Zanstra will be with us. All that coming up right after this.
A 2013 survey asked people around the world whether sex without marriage is morally wrong. Every country where more than 90% said, yes, it's morally wrong, Islamic. The worst two tied at 6% saying it's wrong, France and Germany, the nations of Calvin and Luther. Catholic Italy, 11%. Simply sad. The United States, well, 31%. Not even one in three thinks extramarital sex is morally wrong. Our nation needs a Truth Team very badly. Support Point of View Radio today at pointofview.net. Set up your monthly gift by clicking the Truth Team 360 picture and then carefully follow the directions. pointofview.net. By phone, you can give at 1-800-347-5151, 800-347-5151, or mail that first donation to Point of View, Box 30, Dallas, Texas, 75221, Box 30, Dallas, 75221. Point of View will continue after this.
America Live. This is Point of View. And now, Kirby Anderson.
Second hour, if you'd like to join our conversation, 1-800-351-1212. I know that a lot of our American Family Radio stations pick up this hour, and I might just mention that there were some stations that actually were hit pretty hard by a tornado. So again, if you are one of those, we certainly want to be praying for you and want to encourage our listeners to do so. This hour, we're going to, as I mentioned, talk about the unreached people, and you might remember that we had Wayne Peterson on last week, the International Day of Unreached People, and we want to give you some encouragement, but also some very significant challenges. And in studio with me today is Mario Zanstra, a good friend that I have known for, hate to admit it, but it's been decades now. We've sat on various boards together. An individual that for many years, 17 years, was the president and CEO of Pine Cove Camp. Also, more recently, has been the regional director for Redeemer City to City. And, of course, that to be was actually in the real estate market with the Staubach Company. A real evangelist committed to disciple-making, born in the Netherlands, graduated from the University of Southern California, and he is the president of East-West Ministries. Thank you so much for being here today.
Hey, Kirby, thank you for letting me join you.
And I might just mention, you can watch, since he's in studio with us, we've had John Mazel on this program before. It's been a while, and so now to talk to an individual that's kind of running the day-to-day operations, it just means a great deal. And this is a statistic I always love to mention to people ever since you gave me this brochure. Every hour, 7,250 people turn to Christ. And so in some respects, what you're seeing is that Christianity is spreading, some people say, 100 times faster in these unreached and persecuted nations than in places like the United States.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. I think, oftentimes we watch the news or even think about the current events, we think that perhaps that Islam is growing faster than Christianity. But in fact, Christianity is growing perhaps at its fastest rate in all of history.
Yes. Now, let's, if we can, talk about East-West. We have mentioned that ministry for many years. And of course, we've had John Mazel on. But again, this has a number of different elements. And if you go to our website, pointofview.net, we've posted a couple of really good articles. For example, what we do and how we do it and some other very good links to East-West. You can go to eastwest.org to find some of that material. But let me just have you kind of share a little bit about the vision and where you're going to be moving in the next few years.
Well, it's amazing. East West is going to be 25 years old this year, this next year. And we had this crazy idea. Our passion was to share the gospel with 120 million people in a five-year period. We're four and a quarter years into that. And kind of our desire is to mobilize the church, evangelize the lost, equip those who could be church leaders, and then multiply disciples or multiply churches. And the mobilizing piece is something as simple as taking somebody who might go on a short-term trip to one of our locations, to even having somebody go on a long-term experience with East West, 2-year, 3-year, maybe a lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, we have about 250 missionaries that are in nearly 50 spiritually dark countries around the world.
And I might just mention, we can't mention what those countries are, but people can kind of figure some of that out. And certainly, even though you don't know the name of the country, you certainly can pray for some of those individuals. And so talk about this, because it's not just evangelism, it's discipleship, it's church planting, it's a variety of other aspects, isn't it? So explain that.
Well, so for us, our passion has been evangelism historically. Mm-hmm. Our greatest desire is that somebody would recognize that they are a sinner, that their sin separates them from God, and that God made a way for them to have a relationship with him through Jesus Christ and to accept that free gift of grace. And what we realized and what we know from Scripture is that that message rings true no matter where you go.
Right.
And what we've seen is that in these spiritually dark places, of which many of them, 2 out of 5 people on this planet out of 7 billion people have never, ever heard of the name of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, I was in a country not too long ago, and I started talking about Jesus Christ, and the person looked at me like, what are you talking about?
Yes.
And so I actually had to start with who Jesus was.
Right.
So they didn't even have any concept, yet they were in their 30s. They had never in their life heard about Jesus Christ.
I mentioned the other day when we had Wayne Peterson on, a friend of mine who actually is a former colleague, was in one of those spiritually dark places, and they were talking about Jesus. And finally, one of the people in that tribe said, well, this Jesus sounds really good. Which one of you is Jesus?
That's right.
They just don't, we take for granted so much.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But what we find is that as you go into these countries who, you know, in many of these places, they're very, very poor economically.
Mm-hmm.
And they may be resigned to the fact of where they are, but they have a longing for some hope. And it's interesting as we begin to dialogue about what does it mean to have a relationship with Jesus Christ and for them to come to know Christ, what's even truly more amazing is we say, listen, in light of the fact that you now know this, who do you know that needs to know about this?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I had a young man in one of the places that I was at in the last year, and he and I had a dialogue. Turns out he was in a country that spoke Spanish, but he actually spoke English as well.
Very good.
And as we were dialoguing about the gospel, he actually at one point said, can I be your interpreter?
Mm-hmm.
So I turned to my interpreter and said, well, what do you think? He said, sure, let him do that. So I began to talk to him about the gospel and what it meant to have a relationship with Christ. And it was amazing, Kirby. This guy put his faith, hope, and trust in Jesus Christ, and then 30 seconds later led his mom to Christ.
Yes.
And when I got done, I said, your wife and your daughters are going to be here soon. What are you going to tell them when they get here? And I thought he was going to tell them about what happened to him. And he says, I'm going to tell them that they have a need, too.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's the kind of guy that we would love to invest in, equip, train. And I think about the village that he lives in. He could have a profound impact on that village and even on his country. His countenance was a countenance of joy, yet he lived in a country that was resigned to poverty. But God captured his heart. Amazingly, I actually, as I shared the gospel with him, he put his hand over his heart and just talked about the change that was going on in his own life.
Isn't that something? You show me the pictures of him. So again, we see that this is somebody we can also be praying for as well. And that's really what it is. It's, you know, taking the gospel and then entrusting it in faithful men who will teach others also. So it seems to me that really is something that's part of what you call a movement. You're really talking about this idea of igniting a movement. Talk about that, if you might.
Well, what we recognize is that we as Americans, as we go overseas, what we might be able to do is manage local indigenous people. But oftentimes, my skin color doesn't make a difference in a country where nobody looks like me.
Yeah.
But if I can influence somebody with the gospel and I can train them as to how to share their faith, how to make a disciple, how to plant a church, it's in this idea of church planting movements where God does an amazing work. You know, I can share the gospel with you one-on-one, and that's amazing when you come to Christ. But if you turn around and you tell 3 people, and they tell 8 people, and they tell another dozens of people, that's when a movement of God really begins to happen. And I recognize East, West, and all the mission agencies, we cannot create movements of God. But we bow before the throne of grace, and we ask God, would you do a mighty work in the places that we go? We pray, literally, Holy Spirit, would you have your way? Would you run in the streets of India? Would you run in the streets of Nepal? Would you run in the streets of Eurasia or in South Asia or beyond? And God has been faithful as he's gone before us as we go out and proclaim.
East-West Ministries, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about training those individuals, but also multiplying churches, equipping local believers, and maybe even a movement in motion. We've got some very exciting things to share with you, but at the same time, perhaps you would like to ask a question or make a comment. Maybe you've gone on a short-term mission trip, or maybe you've gone with East-West Ministries. Do want to give you that opportunity to join with us, 1-800-351-1212. Mario Zanstra with us, president of East West Ministries. Just an exciting opportunity to spend some time learning about the unreached people of the world. We'll come back with more right after this.
This is Viewpoints with Kirby Anderson.
Tomorrow in theaters throughout America will be the film In Our Hands, The Battle for Jerusalem, produced by CBN. June 5th marks the 50th anniversary of the 1967 Six-Day War in Israel. This film is an accurate depiction of what took place and will help tell the story that few people in America know about the battle. Arab nations surrounding Israel had a battle plan to wipe Israel off the map. The young Jewish nation was both outmanned and outgunned. Not only did Israel survive, the troops moved into Jerusalem and even occupied the Golan Heights. Production for the film took about a year to complete. Gordon Robertson was in the studio with me to promote the film and talked about the various permissions they had to receive from the Israeli government to shoot in the actual places where the battles took place. The arms and uniforms are authentic or reproductions. Some of the most pivotal battle scenes were shot at Ammunition Hill, and the film is told through the compelling stories of the Israeli paratroopers. One of the most memorable scenes shows a woman who gives a flag to the battalion commander. She explains that she brought the flag to him because it flew in the old city before they left in 1948. She wanted him to hang the flag on the city once again. You know, in the last 50 years, archaeologists have uncovered some of history's most important archaeological finds in and around Jerusalem. These discoveries were only possible because Israel was able to occupy the city after the Six-Day War. There are some dark stories in the film. There were Israeli death and casualties. People were injured both physically and mentally, but the movie does try to provide light in the midst of the dark reality. Michael Medved calls it one of the most moving films I've seen this year and a fitting 50-year commemoration of a crucial turning point in world history. I hope you go to a theater tomorrow to see it. I'm Kirby Anderson, and that's my point of view.
In Our Hands, The Battle for Jerusalem. In select theaters one night only, Tuesday, May 23rd. Information at inourhands1967.com.
You're listening to Point of View, your listener-supported source for truth.
In studio with us today, Mario Zanstra, as we're talking about East-West Ministries. Let me just mention, if you go to our website, pointofview.net, or just directly go to eastwest.org, we have a link there to what we're all about. Also, a section there, Get Involved, Pray, Give, and Go. We're going to talk about all the ways you can get involved, and I would encourage you, if you've already been on a short-term mission trip, maybe you could give us a call, 1-800-351-1212, and if you'd like to know a little bit more, have some questions, maybe there's some thoughts, or maybe you have a burden for some part of the world, Mario is here to answer your questions. When we talk about these unreached groups, and there are about 6,000 in round numbers, in most cases, we have very few missionaries that go, and if I remember right, it's less like 10% of all missionaries go to those areas, and only about 1% of our money goes there. So we've got a real dysfunction here that we need to turn around, don't we?
Well, I think the issue is, you know, when you're going into places that are dangerous, and really when you think about our history and John Mazel, our founder, John was a former Marine and a former quarterback in college. He loved danger. Yeah. And so we would go to places that were dangerous places. Well, going into places that are unreached or you actually can't get into those countries, you have to be very creative on how you get there.
Yes.
But it is interesting to note that only one penny out of every dollar is spent on people who are in the unreached areas of the world. And that only one in 10 missionaries go to those places. Now, that's I mean, everybody has to know what their calling is to God, through God. But our calling is to those places. We have a real heart for those who maybe perhaps apart from us going to that part of the world or to that country or to that tribe would never encounter Jesus Christ.
You know, right now we have the president over in the Middle East, and I know that one of the areas that you work in, we can't mention the specific countries, but it's in the Middle East, and you even have kind of a Muslim focus where you want to help Muslims discover the truth about Jesus through the gospel. That would be a place where even some of our listeners might be able to go, even on a short-term trip, couldn't they?
They could. And what we're finding, you know, and you've heard stories like this, we're finding that oftentimes Muslims are becoming curious about their own religion. As they see the terrorism and they see the killing, they begin actually to examine whether or not what they have put their hope in is the right thing to put their hope in. Of course, you and I both know that the place to put your hope is in Christ. But we've had it where we actually go into these countries and they seek us out. And they ask the question, are you a God seeker?
Wow.
And when you begin to have that kind of a dialogue with somebody, we had a young man who was from Morocco, and he was actually visiting another country getting educated, and he asked one of our staff, are you a God seeker? Which scared our staff because he thought perhaps he was going to get arrested.
Yeah.
But they spent the next 9 months on Friday night doing a comparative religion course.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this young man, Ahmed, never came to Christ in that time frame, but what he was asking was the right kind of questions. What he said was, listen, my religion has been hijacked, and I would like to actually be involved in a religion of peace. And he began to ask questions about Christianity. So they are proactively, in essence, running to Jesus because of what's happening in their own world.
Yes, we've had Tom Doyle on. Of course, he's with E3, but talking about some of these open doors that are happening because they have dreams or they're having a sense of frustration. Joel Rosenberg's talked about the fact, again, that they look at their religion and they're saying, if this is what Islam is, and I see ISIS or I see Al-Qaeda, I want to see if there's some kind of truthfulness. And I think there's some real open doors right now in the Muslim world, don't you think?
Well, there are open doors. And the beauty is that the gospel rings true no matter what tribe, tongue, nation, nationality, even religious background. It is the way to pierce the heart of a man or to pierce the heart of a woman and have them be drawn to the throne of grace. And, of course, that's our greatest desire.
Yes. One of the things I thought we might spend a little bit of time talking about is how one individual can really begin a whole, if you will, revival. And I will hold this up and just hope that people on the screen will look at this, because this is, if you look at it, and I would certainly encourage people to get one of these outstanding resources. It shows how this one individual, and again, it's called DK, so I'll let you explain who that is, basically just evangelized the country by passing on these biblical principles to each individual. It's a phenomenal story.
Well, it is an amazing story. It actually, when you think about East-West's mobilization, evangelism, equipping, and then multiplying, it is actually the greatest case study around. We had a short-term missionary go into India, and with a long-term missionary, meet with a local named Deepak. They shared the gospel with Deepak, and he came to Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And he began to ask lots of questions. It was very obvious that Deepak had a great desire to know more about this new Savior of his, Jesus Christ. And as he revealed himself as somebody who really wanted to make a difference, they began to train him on disciple-making and on church planting. And so what Deepak did over a short season of time is he planted 11 churches, and then those 11 churches began to plant churches. And over the course of a 5-year period, 2,465 churches were planted. The average house church had between 10 and 15 people. So in his lineage, you literally had tens of thousands of people who had come to Christ and were going to church. But here's what's even more amazing. It's now probably 3,500 or 4,000 house churches, and those house churches share the gospel in Andhra Pradesh with 100,000 people per month.
Per month.
And about 10% of those are coming to Christ and becoming actively involved in a house church. Well, when you talk about changing a nation or a state or a community, I mean, that's God at work. So he was a short-termer shared, a long-termer followed up. He was evangelized. He was equipped. And the byproduct was churches were multiplied, and literally tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, are being exposed to the gospel.
And in this brochure, 17 generations of disciples. You know, we always talk about, you know, this is my spiritual child or grandchild, but this is great, 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 great grandchild all the way down. It's just a phenomenal, phenomenal
story.
Well,
and they say in church planting movements, if you get beyond the fourth generation, mm-hmm. if you can get to the fifth generation, they actually become very organic and they go on their own. And mm-hmm. so this one, let's just say someday we lose the right to be in India.
Yes.
And that could happen in our lifetime. The work goes on in the midst of persecution as these people who've been trained continue to share who Jesus is and what he's done for those people.
Before we take a break, let's talk about how we can involve some of our listeners. They're people that are saying, oh, I want to get in on this. This sounds really exciting, and I would have always wanted to see what I can do. I share my faith here in this community, and maybe occasionally I see somebody come to know the Lord, but I've heard stories that when you go to some of these places like Asia and Africa, the Middle East, South America, some of these Caribbean islands, you just see conversions almost instantaneously. So how does somebody get involved in all of this?
Well, there's a couple of ways. One, at East West, we believe in the power of prayer.
Sure.
So if you go online to eastwest.org and you go to things that you can do, prayer is one of them. And we mm-hmm. actually have prayer notices that go out twice a week where you can mm-hmm. sign up and you can actually pray very specifically for parts of the world. The second thing you do is go on a short-term trip. I went on my first short-term trip several years ago with East West, and here's what I would say, Kirby, is that I've been a believer since 1977, but what the trip did was it put skin on my faith.
Mm-hmm.
I had the privilege of sharing the gospel 27 times in the course of 4 days, was able to lead literally dozens and dozens of people to Christ. As a matter of fact, 80% of the people I shared the gospel with came to Christ.
There you go.
And on my trip, there was a young man who had never, ever shared his faith.
Mm-hmm.
Yet when it was all said and done, he'd come back. He was alive.
Yes.
Because of what God had done. And so you can go to the Caribbean island or to South America. We are doing refugee evangelism. We're doing it now. If you go to our website Perfect. And you go on short-term trips, you can find out that we're doing trips to Athens, to Oslo, Norway. We have trips that are going to France and to Belgium, places that you can go and share with refugees who are very mobile. And you could be used by God for the gospel to be spread in Europe.
So, again, you can go to the website. We have this linked right now. And, again, it's eastwest.org. And there is a whole section on various initiatives, how to get involved, some media and resources, and a number of things that I would really encourage you to find out. And there's a section which I would encourage you to go to which says get involved, pray, give, and go. So the first part is pray. Second of all, you might want to give to some of these initiatives and then go. And that has a whole list of all sorts of mission trips, long-term opportunities, East Asia teaching opportunities. So whatever your gift might be, that is the case. So let's take a break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about training, because some people might say, well, okay, that's easy for Mario. He's got the gift of evangelism. You know, he witnesses to everything that moves. This is not what I can do. So I want to talk a little bit about how people can be trained to do that. And if you've been on a mission trip, I'd love to hear from you as well, especially if you've done something with East West. 1-800-351-1212. We'll continue telling you some stories about what has been happening around the world and really try to give you a world vision, a vision for this unreached group of individuals, almost 6,000 different individuals that certainly do indeed need to hear the gospel. And if you'd like to join us, that number, 1-800-351-1212. We have our links at our website, pointofview.net. Mario Zanstra with us, president of East West. We'll be back with him right after these important messages.
From CBN Documentaries comes a new film, In Our Hands, The Battle for Jerusalem.
Our goal is clear, to wipe Israel off the map.
For 6 days in 1967, surrounded by enemies on all sides, Israel stood alone, fighting for survival. In Our Hands, The Battle for Jerusalem, in select theaters for a one-night event, Tuesday, May 23rd only. Theater and ticket information is available at InOurHands1967.com.
We go through seasons, getting our education, falling in love, marriage, children, challenges, success. Sometimes the checkbook is full, and sometimes it's not. And through all of that, Point of View is here, working for you, working with you to make a difference. Please consider whether this is the season for you to support Point of View, to join the Truth Team. Join today at pointofview.net/team or call for details 800-347-5151, 800-347-5151. Let's work together for good. pointofview.net/team.
Point of View will continue after this.
You are listening to Point of View. The opinions expressed on Point of View do not necessarily reflect the views of the management or staff of this station. And now, here again is Kirby Anderson.
Privileged to have in studio with us today Mary Zanstra, and if you'd like to join our conversation, 1-800-351-1212. East West Ministries, and for just a minute, let's talk about training. Because, Mario, some people might say, well, again, you're an evangelist. You're really good at this kind of stuff. You know, John Maisel, you know, he will go behind the Iron Curtain and share with anybody. I'm a little more timid, and I need some training. Is that available through East West?
Well, first of all, it is available, and the fact that you might be a little fearful of doing it is not uncommon.
Yes.
They say that the statistics say that 92% of people who would call themselves an evangelical have never, ever shared their faith.
Isn't that something?
And who knows what their barriers are. So what we do is that if you're going on a short-term trip, two of our three training sessions are actually about evangelism.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk to them about, you know, what does it mean to engage somebody and know a little bit about them? In other words, understand their story.
Mm-hmm.
And then you share your story, which in the course of sharing your story, you're talking about your own conversion. And you know, I oftentimes will share what happened to me in December of 1977.
Mm-hmm.
But then when it's all said and done, we talk to them about I'll call it the four S's: sin, separation, substitution, salvation.
Mm-hmm.
And we just talk to them, and if you can remember those four words, it gives you an opportunity, whether you're using your Bible in front of you or whether you're talking about the individual verses. For me to say we could train anyone might be an overstatement. But I would tell you, we've had a lot of people that were very hesitant to go on a short-term trip, but after the training, God did amazing things. As a matter of fact, recently I had a young man my age, so not so young. He was going on a trip with me to South America, and he had only shared his faith with his mother, father, sister, and his future son-in-law.
Right.
And he was wondering, you know, can I do this? And so we went through the training, and we got done that night, and he said, are you telling me that with this track and with what I now know, I can share with anybody even here?
Mm-hmm.
I said, anybody. It's the gospel.
It's the gospel.
Yeah. Go ahead and share it. And he said, well, I've got a guy that I'm mentoring, and I don't think he's a believer. And I said, well, why don't you call him tonight and just say, can I meet with you and just talk to you about what I'm learning, because I'm getting ready to go on this trip. He sits down with the young man, and he walks him through the gospel with this little track. And he says, is there anything that's holding you back from putting your faith, hope, and trust in Jesus? And the gentleman said, yes, two things. So what are they? And he shared the two. Well, my friend who was in training grabbed his Bible, answered the two questions with his Bible,
mm-hmm.
and then said, now, is there anything that's holding you back from trusting Christ now? And he said, no. And so right there, he led this young man to Christ. And then he's like, oh, what do I do now? Well, thankfully, he flipped the page, yeah. and the page says, you know, now that you're a new believer, the best thing to do is to read the Gospel of John,
yeah.
become actively involved in an evangelical church. And anyway, he thought it was all about going to this South American country and sharing his faith.
Mm-hmm.
And really what it was all about was him sharing the gospel with this friend of his who he'd been mentoring.
So again, you can actually be trained by East West and learn a lot more about how to use this, not only before you go to the mission field, but just right there in your own backyard.
Oh, as a matter of fact, we have a real heart for our backyard. As you know, the nations have come to us.
Yeah.
And
about the Go Here program. Yes.
Oh, yeah. The nations have come to us. And what we've realized is that there's a rapid deployment of really refugees that are mm-hmm. coming from all over the place. And if you look at the city that I live in, mm-hmm. They say that there are 50 different nationalities that are inside the loop in the Dallas area. Well, that's people from all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have an initiative called Go Here. And in the Go Here initiative, it is our desire to help a church know who lives around you. What are the nations that are in your neighborhood? And we actually have a tool that can help them find out what nations are in their neighborhood. And in Go Here, we actually take the same tools and principles that we use overseas. Like we might do with somebody in India,
mm-hmm.
for somebody who's moved from India to here. and we share the gospel contextually in light of their background.
Yeah.
And so if it's a Muslim, we share the gospel a certain way with somebody who's got a Muslim background or a Buddhist or a Hindu. And in the Go Here initiative, we train you specifically based on the nations that are in your neighborhood. And really what we're trying to do is we're trying to find churches that would have a heart for their neighborhood and to use the same principles that we use internationally within a mile or two of their church campus.
You know, Mario, we have a number of pastors that I know listen to this program because I'm out and about and people tell me that they listen. I know we have seminary students that sometimes about this time of the day are getting out of class and are listening to this program. So you're kind of looking for churches to partner as well as individuals. So speak to those individuals that may be an elder, a deacon, a church leader, a pastor, or something like that. Is this something that they could actually implement in their own community?
Sure, absolutely. And they can go to eastwest.org and they can click on the tab that says Go Here and it'll find out who the contact person is and how you can get involved. But what we do is you come to us. We actually work with you. We'll take the church address, and we use this tool to find out who literally is in your neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And then we set up a series of trainings with you so that you actually, I mean, you know, our staff in Plano is about 50 people. We can't cover the Metroplex.
Yeah.
But you, with your parishioners, perhaps could have a real heart for your neighborhood. We'll train you on how to share, how to engage, how to follow up, what happens if they come to Christ. Oftentimes, they may not be comfortable in your church, but you can help them be encouraged to start a house church in their apartment complex or in their neighborhood. Oftentimes, they huddle together because that they know the people that they know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing. You could see a movement of God happen outside the walls of your church with people in your community because you know how to do this training. And you can go find out more by going to Go Here tab on our website.
You know, it is amazing that some of the places where we broadcast, I've had a chance to talk with people, whether it's in places like Los Angeles or New York, but even in some of these other cities where there's maybe 200 or more different languages spoken in the public schools. So you recognize you've got all these indigenous people groups right in your own community, even before you go on an airplane across the water to another place where you might be able to share the gospel. You have opportunities right there in your own community.
Well, and the beauty is whether you go on a short-term trip or you work in your neighborhood, it is taking that thing that you say is the most important thing in your life, and you're putting skin on your faith.
Yes.
It's actually practicing what you believe. You know, John Maisel says this. He says, if Jesus is who he says he is, and he is, and if God the Father occupies the throne in heaven, and he does, and if the word of God is true, and it is, and if the Holy Spirit dwells within you, and he does, and if people, if they don't come to know Christ, they are eternally separated from him, then why would it not radically alter the way you think and live?
Yes.
Why would you not want to go to your neighborhood? Why would you not want to go to South America or to Africa or to the Middle East or to Eurasia? I mean, the truth is, if it's true, and it is, it ought to radically change the way we think and live.
Let's talk about some of the challenges before you. I mentioned about 6,000 different people groups. I know you have a goal to plant 50,000 new churches, at least 50% among unreached people groups. Talk about what the vision is for you and for Kurt and for John Maisel and others.
Yeah, so our greatest desire, so when we think about, and we're actually in the process of, we're finishing Ignite a Movement in 2017.
Mm-hmm, right.
And we have a new initiative that we are moving forward. But in our plan, our desire was to share the gospel with 120,000 or 120 million people in the course of 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And what's amazing is that, and this is the statistics hot off the presses, we've shared the gospel with 103 million people.
Wow.
Over the course of the last 4.25 years. And here's what's wild. 7.2 million have come to Christ.
Right.
7.2 million. So if you think about it, pick any major city, but I'll pick Dallas since that's where I live. That's the population of the Metroplex. So if you can imagine that if everywhere you went, every road you drove down, every barista you met at Starbucks or the person at the drive-thru at Chick-fil-A, everybody had encountered Jesus and had come to Christ. That's what our hope is. Well, our desire in that 5 years was that 1 million people would become disciples, that they would come to faith, they would become actively involved in a disciple-making or church-planting movement, become involved in a house church, and become a disciple. Our prayer was for 1 million. I remember when that was shared with me 5 years ago, and I said, I think that's impossible.
Yes. Here you are.
And Kurt Nelson said, hey, listen, nothing's impossible with God. Mm-hmm. And so our desire as we move forward in the next 3 years is that we would share the gospel with 90 million people in 3 years. And then out of that, we would have 1 million disciples. And that's hard to fathom. But it only happens if church planting movements happen.
Right.
And we see them happening now in India. We see them happening in this one country in the Caribbean. We see it happening in Vietnam. We see it happening in Nepal. We see it happening in other southeastern nations.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, God is at work. He's on the move.
Yeah.
And we just get to participate. And so the barriers may be, how do we get there? How do we stay there? But what we see is that when we get a chance to go, God's doing amazing, amazing things.
Part of Ignite a Movement. And as Howard Hendricks used to say, if that doesn't light your fire, your wood is wet. You know,
that's
so
right.
When we come back, I'd love to always talk with you a little bit about revival as well and Reformation and some of the Great Awakenings and things like that. And we are certainly seeing that overseas, but even what has happened in this country as well. So we've got a lot to talk about. Mario Zanstra with us. And if you'd like to know a little bit more, we have his picture there. Just click on that button that says See More. That will take you to East West Ministries. And just go to eastwest.org. There's a section there to get involved and also some information about what is their vision and their plans. All that coming up right after these important messages.
Welcome to the First Liberty Briefing. I'm Jeremy Dice. According to the Fresno Bee, the Fresno City Council is considering adding the national motto, In God We Trust, to the wall of the council chambers. But at least one local resident opposes the proposal. In the mind of one atheist protester, the delicate balance between church and state is upset entirely by the public display of these four words. And despite the fact that the atheist writes, quote, atheists like me feel the idea of God has little meaning, unquote, he encourages the local community to oppose a word which he believes has little meaning. One wonders how a word with such little meaning can violate the so-called separation of church and state, but that's another issue. Of course, if folks wanted to purchase the article in the Fresno Bee, they would do so with coins bearing the national motto since 1864. The city council would be in good company with the United States House of Representatives, which has the motto emblazoned behind the speaker's dais. And on the way to City Hall, residents may have to drive by police or sheriff's cruisers sporting the national motto. Throughout America's history, the national motto has been honored and celebrated as an expression of what it means to be an American. Any effort to prevent its display should be rejected as bald efforts to rewrite our history and destroy our heritage. To learn how First Liberty is protecting religious liberty for all Americans, visit firstliberty.org.
You can learn how to protect religious freedom in the workplace, public schools, your church, the military, and more, by downloading First Liberty's free Religious Liberty Protection Kits at firstliberty.org. That's firstliberty.org. If you want hope for religious freedom, go to firstliberty.org.
Now, back to Point of View, your listener-supported source for truth.
After a few more minutes, Mario Zanstra with us, and again, he is the president of East West Ministries. Mario, for just a minute, I thought we might talk about one of these other things, because you have places where you have people in the field, others where you have initiatives and assistance, but talk about the different regions where you're actually involved right now at East West Ministries.
Yeah, so we're doing work in Latin America, Europe, Russia and the Caucasus, the Middle East, Africa, South Asia, East Asia, and Southeast Asia. And so basically the 1040 window we have
yes.
covered,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to these places where the people are unreached or unengaged, and we're telling about Jesus.
And that 1040 window, a lot of it is the Muslim world. You and I are old enough to remember, of course, that's how John Maisel got started, where the unreached groups and the real closed countries were the communist countries. Now, almost every year I go to Hungary, and we use a facility that used to be used by the communists to indoctrinate students in communism and Marxism. Now we use it to teach the gospel. So I still recognize that we have closed countries like North Korea and places like that, but it seems that most of those closed countries now are the Muslim world, aren't they?
Yeah, they are the Muslim world, and yet, you know, there are ways that we have the privilege of going.
Sure.
And listen, there are things that we do in the United States that even though they may be close to us, there are things that they want. And that those are ways for people to get involved and get into those countries.
It's pretty exciting. You know, I just mentioned this idea of revival and reformation. You and I have talked about this before. You think about we had a first great awakening, Jonathan Edwards and George Whitfield. We had a second great awakening. We had the layman's prayer revival. And to key to this idea of a revival and a reformation, really, first of all, is prayer. But again, in some respects, we don't even know some of the individuals I could mention in the first great awakening. You get to the layman's prayer revival, I'm not even sure we know some of the people that were part of this great movement of God in history.
Well, I know. I did an in-depth study of the Haystack
yes,
revival in 1806.
Example. Yeah.
And it was four guys, and they were praying for New England, this newly found portion of the United States. And they were praying night after night for that area. And this big, nasty storm came in. And as it rolled in, the leader of the group said, my heart tells me that instead of praying for them, we need to pray for ourselves. And so they began to confess and repent personally. And as they confessed and repented personally, God did a great work. And I think about what's going on in the world and even going on in the United States. We could use some confession and repentance.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have this opportunity, I think, to bow before the throne of grace. And we might as well tell God what he already knows about us. I mean, he's all-knowing.
That's right.
And so we might as well tell him what we already know. Confess to him what's going on. Repent. Ask him for forgiveness. Ask him to help change our heart. And it may be that the next great awakening could happen by the listeners on this show.
That's for sure.
As they engage God, as they confess and repent, and as they begin to pray, you know, Lord, what would you do in our country or throughout the world? And I think maybe sometimes we have it too easy here. It's in these highly persecuted countries.
That's right.
Where they maybe have to go underground with their prayer. And God is really responding in a mighty way, as we literally are seeing tens of thousands of people come to Christ every hour.
You were talking about, again, the need for confession and prayer, but I also wanted to come back to something we talked about just a few minutes ago. When you go on a short-term mission trip, certainly you're a blessing to them, but the greatest blessing is what happens to you, because as you've pointed out, a high percentage of individuals have never, ever shared their faith, and an even higher percentage of those have never seen one person come to know the Lord, and that is a revolutionary change in their life, isn't it?
Well, what happens is that as you go on these short-term trips and you have a chance to go to these spiritually dark places and they hear this story about Jesus, what he has done for them, you can see the Spirit of God move in their heart. And listen, we ask them, listen, pray ahead of time. Have your way with the person I'm about to engage.
Mm-hmm.
And so it gives you confidence in the message of the gospel. It gives you confidence in your own story. I think it was Jerry Bridges, who was probably quoting a great reformer, says, you know, you need to wake up every morning and preach the gospel to yourself. And I think sometimes as we go on these short-term trips, we are reminded about what God has done in our life. And it just gives us that confidence to be able to share. One of the people on the trip that I recently went on, they came back, they ended up getting a cab at the airport and led their cab driver to Christ, who was from the Middle East.
Yes.
And it was the confidence that they had gained in South America. And so I think this idea of going, listen, it does have a radical impact on those people. But the impact it has on your own heart.
Yes.
Because, listen, as you share the gospel, it reminds you what Jesus did for you and the changed heart that you have, the new encounter you have with Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, you know, I'm obviously a great proponent, a little bit biased about short-term trips in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And in our case, we just believe that the trips, and we're all about humanitarian aid. We think that's great.
Mm-hmm.
But we love the evangelism piece that goes along with that, because it allows us to be impacted as well. And to see somebody's life, you got to realize this person that I shared the gospel with that led his mother to Christ, his life is never going to be the same.
Right.
Never.
Yes. And you may come back and meet his spiritual grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and things of that nature. Just before we run out of time, let's again talk about what people will find on the website, because some people might want to connect up individually. There may be a whole Sunday school class that would say, let's all go together on a short-term trip, and also talk to the pastors, because, again, we've already mentioned this idea of go here. This could be something where you can do evangelism right in your own neighborhood. So talk about all the resources that are there.
That's right. Well, if you go on our website, there are... you know, obviously just go through it and check it. I would say one of the things you can do is go to the videos section. There are four or five little videos there, and it gives you a chance to see what God is doing in action. And I think it'll give you a flavor of what East West is all about.
And that's one of those things that I would recommend that you might watch it. And the videos are under media and resources. So let me just encourage you, first of all, to see The Impact of One, Let There Be Light, Untouchable, some of these others. And my assignment to you is maybe to watch one of them. Most of them are about 2.5 minutes long. There's one that's, I guess, 6 minutes long, almost 7 minutes long. And then after you watch it, click on the share button and put it on your Facebook page, or maybe send it to your pastor or your Sunday school teacher so that maybe they know a little bit more.
Well, and then if you go on and on the different links that talk about training, the different links that talk about short-term trips, it'll give you a glimpse as to what we do and how we do it. And we would love for you to pray for us. I would love for you to click on the pray tab and give us your email address. We won't bombard your inbox with anything other than prayer unless you ask for something else. And so you can pray for us. Obviously, going is a great way to have you be impacted. And it may be that you just have to go here, go through the Go Here training. And then lastly, if you want to give, we would love for you to be involved economically. We have these 200-plus missionaries. They raise their own support. But East West Ministries provides all the money for the programs that are done. All of the training is done through that. All of the church planting work is done through through us. The individual missionaries are not responsible for that. So we raise funds to help make that happen. And boy, what a joy it is not only to be on staff, but to be involved in what God's doing throughout the world.
So again, it's under Get Involved in Prayer. First of all, become a prayer partner. So that's the first thing that I would recommend. Then you have one on mission trips, internships, and also short-term missions, long-term opportunities. There's just a lot of things. So if you're thinking about missions, this would be another way to connect up with what is happening there at East West Ministries. And Mario, I appreciate you being with us today.
Yeah, and then on any of those tabs, when you click on the tab, it'll tell you who the contact person is. Mm-hmm. And so you can send them an email, and they can send you more information.
It's always great to have you in studio, good friend, and thank you for giving us an hour today.
Hey, Kirby, thank you so very much, and grateful to be part of it.
Pray for Mario as he travels across the globe in various events and opportunities, and pray for the other missionaries involved with East West. But you know what? You can be a short-term missionary as well. So let me encourage you to visit the website, and it is all available through pointofview.net, or you can go to eastwest.org. That's all we have for today. I want to thank Andrew, Alyssa, and Shamila for their help behind the scenes. Have a great day. See you back here tomorrow, right here on Point of View.
A 2013 survey asked people around the world whether sex without marriage is morally wrong. Every country where more than 90% said, yes, it's morally wrong, Islamic. The worst two, tied at 6% saying it's wrong, France and Germany, the nations of Calvin and Luther. Catholic Italy, 11%. Simply sad. The United States, well, 31%. Not even one in three thinks extramarital sex is morally wrong. Our nation needs a truth team very badly. Support Point of View Radio today at pointofview.net. Set up your monthly gift by clicking the Truth Team 360 picture and then carefully follow the directions. pointofview.net. By phone, you can give at 1-800-347-5151. 800-347-5151. Or mail that first donation to Point of View, Box 30, Dallas, Texas, 75221. Box 30, Dallas, 75221.
Point of View is produced by Point of View Ministries.